This is sweet. Camera crews are setting up, and I'm looking totally ripped. Beefcake! Beefcake!
Sweet!
Let's get ready to rumble!
Help! Help! Help!
Hello, humans. Welcome to the M-Word Podcast, brought to you by Martin. Today, joined by Shannon. Shannon, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Martin. Appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. We want to dig into kind of resilience, mental health. I think it's important before we get to that section, maybe set the scene a little bit. So I assume your man's born, but perhaps set the scene those early sort of years, 0 to 10, where you were brought up, sisters, family environment.
Yeah, so I'm Manxed. Born and bred. It was just me and my mum. So me dad kind of wasn't on my birth certificate. So it's just kind of me and my mum. No brothers or sisters either. So yeah, growing up, just, I don't really know.
No, many early memories from those sort of
just playing
earliest.
Football, really. Okay. Just playing football, just playing out with my friends. That's kind of it, really. Nothing too eventful, just really kind of enjoyed life up until the age of 10.
Where were you brought up on the island?
Douglas.
Okay,
Douglas and Willesden. Ended up moving to Willesden when I was three.
Right. So. And the attraction with football particularly, just friends were playing that at the time and that's something you did?
I actually remember this quite well. I was in reception and in Willesden school we had like an underground. And I used to just sit and watch the guys take penalties all the time. And there's one day they must have just got sick of me watching. Just said, right, come on, let's have a go. And I remember I scored, and they were like, right, yeah, you can play. and then I just kind of played with the lads, growing up. And then just I think it was about the age of 10. I actually joined a team. I joined Corinthians, who I play for now. Joined the Alamang Centre of Excellence at the age of 12, and then I've been with the two ever since.
Are there many girls playing at that stage? Obviously, it's certainly in the last few years of England, it's visually, it's obviously a lot more popular, but back then?
So it was actually quite popular back then. I still played with a lot of girls that I played with when I was at that age. Even nowadays, unfortunately, the women's league itself isn't doing very well at the moment, so we're trying to get more women involved in football. But I believe it's still very popular amongst the younger generations, considering, you'd hope so, considering
the success.
Yeah, the success with the Lionesses. They've done absolutely incredible. So yeah.
And the growth then, the stunting of that on the island, is that just at more of a senior level and there's just not too many?
Yeah, there just seems to have kind of died off. When I was 16, I came in and, there was a lot of the older lot and, it was a lot more competitive. There were a lot more teams involved and I absolutely loved it. And then it just seems to be kind of, as time's gone on, it's just kind of started to drop off a little bit. I'm not too sure why. I know that they're trying to put more work in behind the scenes to obviously make that happen. We did have a bit of a do Wednesday evening where there's over 60 girls kind of come down and, they were current players and non-players and we all just got together and had a good kick about and that was nice. So it's nice to see that there's actually some women out there that are keen. We just need to try and seek encourage them to get involved in the league and try and save it.
Yeah, probably takes a while to just gain that momentum, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And the Isle of Man being very sporty, ultimately competing with a lot of other sports as well.
Yeah, 100%. And the Isle of Man women's team, you've got the Isle of Man Games this year as well. So, a lot going on. We just need to try and just keep women involved, really. So, in the hope that the league doesn't go downhill.
Yeah, okay. And those days of playing football, so we'll get on to your kind of mum's situation in a moment, but that was, you just got out after school, play, and you were...
Pretty much. And lunchtimes, as soon as that bell went, it's like straight out there. Try and eat your lunch as quickly as possible and just get straight out. So, football's been a big part of my life. And, I was very fortunate when I was 17 as well. I moved to Liverpool to go and play in an academy based at Everton. for a couple of years. I actually played against Nikita Paris, who is in the Lioness squad. So I was exposed to quite a few big names out there as well. So yeah, you know, it's just something I've always...
How did that opportunity come about?
I got invited to go to the Ireland FA. I'd received just some information saying, you know, Everton were trialing for this kind of academy setup that they had going on, where you could do your A levels and play football at the same time. Now, at the time, I was actually already trialing for the Bristol Academy, and it was when Mark Sampson, any kind of footballer kind of heads out there would probably know who he is, and he went on to manage the England women's team. And then he was kind of hosting the trials, and I'd been invited down there to go and trial. And I got in there, and it was just kind of around that same period that I'd also received an invite to go and trial for Everton. And for me, it just seemed like a better option going with Everton. So yeah, obviously I got my 3A levels at the time and got to play football every single day, and it was brilliant.
And were you in a house over in Liverpool?
I was homestayed. I had 2 homestays, and then kind of my final year, Hope University actually let me move in on their campus, which was good. And, you know, I was still there when a lot of the uni students had gone back home, so I had, like, the whole place to myself, and I used to invite all the football girls around, and yeah, it was great experience.
And the level, what was the level like in regards to football?
Yeah, it was good. When I kind of initially went out there, unfortunately, the reason I actually come back was because I got injured. So, you know, I kind of gone over there, and it really made me realise, you know, although I was quite good over here, I was a little fish in kind of a big pond. It was one of those moments. And I was, you know, the game was just something completely different. And I was like, right, I just need to work hard. I need to work hard. And I ended up playing football like 7 times a week. And I was training with the Everton ladies team, the academy set up. And I'd gone and started training with Mossley Hill as well. And, you know, there's such a big step up in all levels, really, compared to the Isle of Man. And unfortunately, I overdid it, and I got...
It was the injury.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something that I've still kind of struggled with, but it's only recently that, through obviously what I do as a job and the strength training, understanding biomechanics and anatomy, that I've actually started to improve, and I'm able to kind of play. And, you know, it was a few years ago when we went to Yunus Mon. It was the Allen Games. And then I thought I was going to have to pack it in. But yeah, just working the gym, getting strong, and like I said, just learning has helped me continue to play.
I spoke to a few sports people, and they talked like when they've had injuries, and that being that real difficult phase, because it's certainly been an integrated part of your life. Or people who retire from sport, their sport, that it's been there 24/7. So mentally, what challenge was that like then, soon coming back to the Isle of Man, injured?
It was, you know what, it was really difficult. And I think because I'd gone over there so fit, so strong, and unfortunately this injury really, really affected my confidence. And when I came back, I was like, you know, I just got into this level and I just wanted to keep progressing. And I was kind of back here, and, you know, no disrespect to the Isle of Man and women's football here, but I was like, I just wanted to keep going. Yeah. And it felt like just a massive setback, being back on the island when I actually wanted to try and make it professionally. So I fell out of love with football for a good like 2-3 years, and just started going out partying and getting drunk, because I was just like completely lost.
So if you look back now at that phase, was that when you come back, and again I've seen it with others, you weren't shy, in football there. And suddenly, because you couldn't do it, you'd lost that identity because of the injury.
Yeah, completely. You know, I was still trying to play as coming back, and I was trying, you know, I just kept trying, keep trying, just push through it, but I just didn't feel the same about it anymore. Just, and it was such a big part of me, and I just did not want to just quit.
Yeah. So again, like I said, we'll touch on your mum, but you come back there, what's your, I suppose, did you have another friend and family structure around you to help you through those times, to talk to people? Was that just an internalized thing you had to?
Internalized thing. Like I said, I just kind of, I don't know. I just started going out partying, basically. Is that
the coping mechanism?
It was, because I was lost and I didn't really kind of know what else to do with myself, I guess. And I, you know, I think I was in denial a little bit at the time that I was actually using going out drinking and partying as a coping mechanism, but that's certainly what it was.
So we touched on sort of those early years. We've touched on in other conversations about the realization of your mum and I suppose the environment you're being brought up in. So perhaps you can talk us through that kind of first realization that your mum had some addiction problems, and maybe you weren't, I'm sure, at that age, which you'll describe, wasn't fully appreciating as you are later on in your life, but maybe those early realizations that something different about home life than other people.
Yeah, kind of. The only thing that I really remember was, I do remember when I was actually still in primary school, there were days when my mum was just lying on the couch. She couldn't move and she was in pain. Didn't really understand what that was about. And I remember there was a few days that I kind of missed off school because, you know, your mum wasn't there helping me get ready. And yeah, that was kind of the first thing where I think my mum started to become unwell. And then I didn't really notice much else until I remember this one day, and a few of my cousins had kind of come round, and I remember one of them saying, you know, your mum's got an alcohol addiction, and your mum's an alcoholic.
And you were, what age were you at this stage?
I think I was about 12.
And the person telling you that, what age were they?
I think they were in their 20s.
Okay.
Yeah, must have been in their 20s at the time. Yeah, and, you know, they came around, they obviously knew, you know, much older than me, knew that there was something not quite right, my mum wasn't well. And I think from that kind of moment on, I just really took on the responsibility to try and stop my mum from drinking. And because it really kind of opened my eyes, and, you know, my mum was getting drunk. And I don't mean just like a bit tipsy, you know, I was 12 years old, having to try and pick mum up off the floor and drag her through into the bedroom, into the living room. She'd just fall over all the time. There are a few really kind of disturbing moments. There was one day, for example, I was sat in my bedroom and I remember hearing a massive crash. And my mum had basically, I'd been stood at the top of the stairs and fell down the stairs. And I remember kind of just walking out and looking down to the bottom of the stairs, and my mum was lay there kind of face down with the skirting board kind of stuck in her head.
Mm.
You know, it was kind of experiences like that.
What would you be thinking at that fit, you know, as a 12, 13-year-old?
I just reacted. I didn't really think about it. I just reacted and ran, you know, across the road, get the neighbours, you know, need help and the ambulance. And, you know, there was a fair few times she would just kind of have falls like that. And obviously it's not pretty, but at the time, like I said, I don't really think I overly thought about it. I just got on with it because at the time I felt it was my responsibility to try and fix my mum and try and stop her from drinking and stop her getting in those states. And it was very difficult when she would get in those states, because then I suppose I kind of let myself down, let her down.
Why would you let yourself down?
Just purely for the fact that, you know, I'm there to try and help her. I'm there to try and...
Probably not your job at that age.
Not that job, no, but when you're given such responsibility, you don't know any different. You know, if you let something happen that's not in your mind supposed to happen, then you failed. And that's how I felt at the time. You know, it's a difficult one.
If you look back at 13-year-old Shannon now, what would you say to her?
It's not your responsibility. And believe it or not, it took me a very, very, very long time to realise that. You know, I'm 27 now and I'm still at home caring for my mum. And up until very recently, I've come to terms with the fact that it's not my responsibility. It's well outside of my remit. But I suppose I'm just a daughter trying to be the best daughter, you know, I can. And I try and always associate myself with the individual, and you know, if I was in that state, I'd want support and help as well. I wouldn't want to be left. I've had plenty of people say to me before, you know, how are you still there? You know, how you have to be out of there as quickly as I possibly could. You know, I suppose it's a little bit different when you're in that situation.
Yeah, no.
Because it's your mum.
Absolutely. Feels like that. But the punishing yourself seems harsh.
Yeah, it is harsh. And that's what you do, I suppose. I didn't know any different. Mm.
So I know you've touched on other kind of situations where you've had to maybe hide drink and things like that. That is that a battle that's been that rages from the age of 12 to today?
So for the initial period, it was certainly a big part of it. Unfortunately, my mum suffers with fibromyalgia as well. So her physical health isn't quite what it was. Back then she was fitter to actually get herself to the shop. And, you know, I'd take it off her, hide it away, she'd be straight back out the door. You know, she can't get herself.
Did she know you were hiding it, for example?
She'd know, yeah.
And would she be forthright with you saying, where is it?
I'd just say, you're not having it. You're not having it, and she just...
Is that a difficult... It must be a difficult position for being 13 years old.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're the parent and the dominant one in that relationship.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's difficult when someone's got that kind of addiction. You know, they'll find a way to get it regardless of what you do. You know, because she'd go back to a spot and I'd have taken it and it wasn't there. And she'd be like, where is it? And she'd just, like I said, she'd just be straight back out the door, and I used to kind of go away, hide it in the shed, in a little plastic bag, and you know the amount of bottles that I accumulated over initial period of time when she was really unwell was insane, really. Like I said, as she's kind of gotten older, it's not been quite as bad. Still not great. Still having lots of falls, you know, given the fact that when she has been getting drunk, when she has been unwell, the fact that her physical, you know, illnesses aren't great. She's got fibromyalgia, her balance isn't good either. She's got Meniere's disease. Yeah.
So describe what they are, the two.
Fibromyalgia is, it's an illness that causes pain, basically, throughout the body. It's to do with the nervous system. So... yeah, you know, she ends up with various different symptoms. Her legs have become very weak, and she's just in a lot of pain all the time. Meniere's disease is to do with the inner ear, so it knocks your balance. And she's had that for quite a few years now. But I think just as she's getting older, things are just starting to worsen. Mm.
Just compounds the problems.
100%. You know, it doesn't... certainly doesn't make things easier now. Don't get me wrong, she's not consuming the same amount of vodka as what she was back in the day. And don't get me wrong, she's had periods of being like really well, especially after that initial period when I first kind of spoke in school and kind of managed to get some help. She went to Genreach and Grenadier Court, and they were two brilliant units, and she went to the acute and managed to kind of get herself stable and then moved over to the rehab unit and was able to function in the community. She'd still have times where she'd relapse, but she had strategies to actually try and help her get out of that. She's now at a point, you know, over the last kind of year, she's been like a vegetable. That's the only way I can really, really describe, you know, that tying in with alcohol and not being able to move or poor ability just to kind of walk around, constant falls. It's
what age is she?
She's 64 now. And you know, like I said, I think when we were out in Sweden, she had kind of two suicide attempts last year, all around the same time, one being, you know, nearly very successful. So yeah.
Can I ask, was that a drunken suicide attempt or realised? Well, you know, I suppose a non-drunken one of, I don't
say. No, that. she was consuming a fair bit of alcohol at that point, but she's got depression, bipolar 2 disorder. So, you know, she'd just gone, a couple of her friends unfortunately passed away not too long before that, was a few months before that. And it just sent her into a real bad hole, which she couldn't get out of. And unfortunately, we don't have those two units anymore. We've even got Manel in court, and yeah, I don't know whether the kind of the policies and stuff have changed with that. I think they're very short on beds in there, and you know, we just couldn't get her in. And
yeah, so that's just, I mean, I wouldn't know the support network from the government and what it's like, but I presume that's the, what you talk about there, there's two homes, it's reduced. Is that, I appreciate when I talk about whether they've got budgets to do that, but do you feel that support network's good enough on the Isle of Man?
It could certainly be better, because in my opinion, they've taken away two units that had, you know, a fair few beds, you know, and a unit that specialised in those with, you know, who were in acute state, and then those who required just rehab and then getting back into the community and getting their lives back. Now, what's happened is obviously they don't have those two units anymore. They built Manan Court, which is an acute unit. I believe they've got only 12, 13 beds. They haven't got many at all, and that's split into kind of the elderly as well. I don't know how many beds there will be on that side, but kind of the adult acute, I believe that's all there is, and at the moment they're full. And what's happened is, you know, those units have gone, and then they've then struggled. I know there's a lot of staffing issues within the hospital now at the moment in community mental health, but they've not been able to kind of bring up the level of support within the community whilst getting rid of those two units. So I think that's where they're really kind of struggling at the moment. And it's a difficult one, really, because it's not just my mum who's suffering. There's so many other people, especially about COVID.
So. Mum in a queue, is that how that works?
So she's under community mental health, you know, and she has kind of support workers and things like that. But she's recently been, the only way we could go was go through respite. So we had to get social worker involved, try and get us some kind of funding for that. And yeah, she's recently only just come out, and it has really helped to kind of break that vicious cycle that she was in prior. You know, she's not come out and reverted back to drinking, but she's certainly come home and is still struggling, unfortunately. So we're doing our absolute best to try and find ways in which it's going to just help give her some of her life back, so that she doesn't revert back to the alcohol. And I think a lot of it comes down to purpose as well. You know, she's so unwell, you know, she can't volunteer, she can't do, you know, she's had to take early retirement, so she's struggling every morning waking up being like, you know, she's just sat there, she does a bit of housework and then what.
Is that so similar then, or relatable to your identity of the football, that you come back, you lose that identity and that purpose?
Mm-hmm.
But why is my purpose and identity?
Yeah, and so when we, you know, if we go back to when we had the two units, and the rehab unit that we had there, they had groups, so they had you know, physical activity groups, to have relaxation, yoga, you know, healthy well-being living kind of groups. So, you know, every single day there was something on, and she was waking up and right, I got this on today. She'd have a little morning routine, and then she was able to, you know, at the time she was physically able to be able to go out driving, so she'd take herself up there. She'd be surrounded by people who she'd been in hospital with, and people who are obviously going through difficulties themselves. So she was able to relate to a lot of people there, and that's what gave her a purpose. And now at the moment, we're really trying to build her in a bit more restricted routine by just utilising groups that are just out there that might be able to, you know, allow her to kind of socialise and stuff. So.
Okay. Well, I want to loop back to something you mentioned earlier, and I think it's really important in your story, is when you think you talked about going to school and talking about your more that ability to talk, and obviously mental health and mental well-being, and that ability now to have, I suppose, a more, certainly in the modern era, it's easier to have those conversations. We're talking now 10, 15 years ago when you did that one, perhaps it was less, it was more unusual, should we say. So what was the breaking point, or what was the point that made you feel you needed, and rightly so, to bring it up and have that discussion, I guess, 16, 15, 17?
It's interesting because I've kind of been thinking about this. Obviously, the first time I touched on this topic about myself as a younger person with mental health difficulties, really, you know, because of course I'm very open about talking about my mum, but this is kind of the first time I've really opened up about myself. Prior to actually even opening up, I do actually remember I was trying to find ways in which I could gain attention, but without kind of trying to actually admit that there was something going on.
So attention for you to get help, or attention because you weren't getting attention at all? Because you
have no, it's attention so that people would, you know, I don't, whether I was very conscious of it at the time, I don't know, but the more that I look back, it was, I think I was trying to get attention through kind of certain behaviours so that people would be drawn to me thinking, you know, hang on a second, there's something up here, but then I wouldn't actually speak. And then it wasn't until, I think I was about 14, and I remember, you know, there was a couple of friends that kind of knew about the situation. And then I remember speaking to this one particular friend, and she was like, we need to go and speak to the headmaster, you know, and that was kind of, at that point, I was ready, because I knew for as long as I continued living the way that I was, things weren't going to get any better. And it's very difficult to admit that there's, you know, there's a problem there. And I certainly was struggling mentally when I was that age. You know, I remember struggling at school, not really wanting to revise, not wanting to draw any kind of attention. I just wanted to basically play football. And that's another reason why football was such a big part of my life when I was younger, was it was actually an escapism. So it was certainly affecting me, and it's very easy, you know, and even to this day, I found it, you know, quite easy to put on this quite hard exterior and to pretend that everything's okay. And that's certainly what I was doing back in those days, until that point my friend was like, you know, it's time.
Did you feel different after you'd had that first conversation with someone?
Yeah, you know, St. Ninian's was where I went, and they did help me massively, and they got me like counselling in, and you know, things did start to move. And when my mum finally went into hospital, it was crazy, because I still remember then going to visit her once she was kind of off the alcohol, they started trying to get her medications right to help her with the depression and bipolar. And I remember going, oh my God, that's my mum. That's my mum who I remember, you know, from the days when I was much, much younger, having barbecues, and you know, she was right, laugh, life and soul of the party. And I just remember seeing her, having a normal conversation with her, and it was just, yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, just bringing back the memories of,
yeah.
Can I ask, when you look at the whole situation, the times and periods where, and this isn't maybe meant to way it sounds, but have you been angry with your mother?
For me, it's more I get frustrated. I get frustrated. It's difficult because someone who is struggling the way that my mum is, you know, there's issues there. And I think for me, like I said, I've put so much responsibility to try and help my mum, to try and fix my mum, obviously way outside of my remit, but it's caused me to be frustrated and feel very frustrated, because there's only ever so much that I can do. You know, I know it's not her fault, and don't get me wrong, there's been a lot of opportunities in terms of like going away and things like that. You know, I know when I was kind of 17, my mum was actually well enough, and she had someone there, she had a partner there to actually help her, so I was able to go away. But you know, since then, as she's kind of deteriorated over the more recent years, I've certainly missed opportunities to kind of go away and just again feeling just take on that responsibility and not asking for help myself.
You're better at doing that now.
Well. Again, it's still something that I struggled with because I don't want to feel like I'm a burden to anyone else.
Where do you think that comes from?
Again, I just don't know if it's still just deeply ingrained in me to, you know, this is my responsibility, these are my issues, and I don't want anyone else to kind of experience the difficulties that I've faced over the years with having to look after someone in that way.
So you touched on that at 15, 16, speak to school. I presume the message to younger people now is that to have those conversations, even if they're, I guess, a pretty extreme circumstances, but it doesn't have to be any level of that extreme to have those conversations. So speak up.
Speak up, 100%. You know, I get it. Like I said, you know, I'm 27 now, and, you know, even up until recently, it's been very difficult for me to try and ask anybody else to kind of come into my world and help me with that. I've became really good at asking help from the services, but anyone other than that, you know, like I said, I don't want to be a burden, and I get what that feels like, and I get what it feels like to just pretend that everything's okay, but nothing's gonna change. You need to just be brave, speak up, and look after yourself. Because when you're in that situation, especially caring for somebody, that, you know, you're putting yourself last. You need to look after your own mental well-being as well.
So when we look at habits and good things you try and do, what would they be? And again, advice to people listening, what kind of habits? To look after yourself?
So your
fitness and well-being.
Yeah, I do. Obviously, my exercise, I'll play football. Socialize as well. It's very easy to kind of isolate yourself, which isn't good. You need to be able to take yourself away from whatever situation that you're in that you're finding difficult and do something that's going to help you kind of de-stress and relax. And you know, I do a lot of learning as well. I do listen to a lot of podcasts and try and understand mental well-being and things like that as much as I can, and more so for myself as well, you know, because I'm at a point now where I just need to do what I need to do for me so that I can try and show up my best version, the best version that I possibly can be for me, for my mum, for my partner, my clients, you know, everyone around me. So just doing things that I enjoy, and that's going to give me a bit of a break, because it's really important to find out what those things are for you. You know, it's all well and good passing those things on to people, but it can be quite individual. Almost one person might not look into it, but that's kind of what I do.
And the job day to day, is that similar then?
In terms of
your job day to day and those bespoke working with individuals in the fitness arena.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that, what you do day to day with them.
So, in terms of what work I do with them, I'm a coach. I'm an online coach, in person coach. My real passion is just trying to help people feel better. You know, I obviously help people lose body fat, build muscle, but again, it's very, very individual to the person. Helping people to just improve their overall well-being and health, and what's going to help them feel confident, them get the most out of life. So that's what I do, and that's what I'm really, really passionate about. Because, you know, exercise has given me so much. You know, I'd certainly recommend that to anyone who's suffering with, you know, with their mental health.
I think that saved you.
I do, to a point, yeah. Yeah, I do. It saved me in a couple of ways. Football, of course, saved me when I was younger, when I was growing up with those kind of real struggles with my mum. And then when I came back from Everton, I eventually, once I'd done with all the partying, I remember waking up one morning and going, this isn't me, I'm fed up with hangovers and rubbish on a Sunday and wasting a day, like, this isn't me. And then that's when I got my own online coach started making changes, started finding myself again, and you know, that really brought me out of it. And
what's it, can I ask what that trigger point, you know, when you wake up, you talk about waking up with a hangover, but was the people around you saying stop going on the drink all the time? Was that just something internal?
Something just clicked in me, and I just was like, Shy, this is not you. And to be fair, I had the Island Games coming up when we went to Gotland. And I knew I had that coming up, and that was in the back of my mind. And I was still just going out and getting drunk. But I knew, well, you know, Gotland aside, I knew that's not me. It was never something I was ever really kind of interested in. I just wanted to party, just as a bit of a release. I didn't feel like I had any purpose anymore. So yeah, that one morning where I just woke up and like, Shannon, this is enough now, you know.
Did it, in those situations where, so addiction is a thing, pretty much a gene related thing. It doesn't mean it's hereditary, but it's in the gene. Was there times when, having seen what your mother is, the situation your mother's in, and then you drink, did you ever have a correlation, you think?
I did initially, and then I don't know. I think before Everton, you know, when you're kind of younger and you're drinking Blue Wickeds and stuff, that was kind of, it was in those kind of more younger days when my mum was really unwell. That I was like, nah, I'm not interested in that. You know, I see my mum drunk every single day, it's not good. But then again, you know, I come back from Everton, and then I kind of latched onto it as a little bit of a crutch, but I knew I had a choice. I didn't have to continue that way. And, you know, like I said, getting my own coach, getting back into the gym, trying to find a purpose again, that's what really inspired me, because it made me understand actually how great I felt when I trained. And obviously I've been suffering a little bit with my mental health, with leaving Everton and with being injured. And I was just like, I want other people to feel this. I want people to realise, you know, how beneficial exercise, activity, improving nutrition, just giving yourself a bit more purpose and looking after yourself, how much that can benefit you. So, yeah.
And not wishing to particularly feel like we're dwelling on that point. You mentioned about your mother and the suicide attempts. So that, like, we're sat here now, and, you know, how much does that dominate your, I mean, anyone losing a parent in any circumstance is not the greatest thing in the world. How do you just accept that's part of life, that one day, how do you deal with that?
Unfortunately, we're all going to end up at some point. It's a difficult one. That's what's really kind of kept me continuing to look after my mum, is I only know I get one. And I would hate for something to happen, whether that be, you know, a suicide attempt, or, you know, that was successful, or anything else to happen, that I didn't try hard enough to look after her as best I can. And that sits with me every single day, because you never know when that day is gonna be. And that's just why I've really continued to do what I've done. I would never want to live with the guilt of not trying harder to take care of her.
Yeah, I'll spend a mass amount of time, but I don't think that'd ever be a label that could be put on you.
No. But it's still
it's your moment. Day. Still need to, yeah.
And then it's just trying to get the balance, and trying to actually live my own life. And that's, you know, I'm 27 now, and that's, it's only now that I'm really trying to figure out what that can look like, whilst, you know, making sure my mum isn't, you know, having issues, and that's where I'm really trying to get help from the services now.
Do you talk to your mum about it? What is your relationship with your mum?
I don't really have much of a mother-daughter relationship with her anymore, and she is just solely reliant on me now, just to help her with things. Unfortunately, unless she's kind of really well in her mood, or we don't really have much kind of conversation as you would with your parents, which is, it's sad, unfortunately, but I don't. Yeah.
So I suppose I go back to the question earlier about it's not about being angry with it, but being frustrated about it. Losing that, and I assume as well, not as your father wasn't around either. That must be, again, to have that resilience, to be self-aware enough to maybe not go down the wrong path. That some of the story you told today, there's that many opportunities you could have taken a different path.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's a big thing. It all comes down for me to his perception. You know, you can have two twins, one, you know, and they both have an alcoholic parent, and one ends up an alcoholic and the other doesn't drink at all. And unfortunately, some people follow down that same kind of route. And, you know, you'll ask them, well, why are you an alcoholic? Well, because my father drank. Why don't you drink? Because my father was an alcoholic. You know, it's one of them. You know, and...
So do you think that's quite strong when you talk about self-sovereignty and you've got to take some ownership for?
Yeah, you've got a choice. I fully believe that we all have a choice in what we do and how we take action. And for me, certainly, you know, I wouldn't want to kind of end up in my mum's position, if I'm being completely honest. You know, want that. We get one life, want to make the most of it.
Interesting. Well, thanks for joining, and I appreciate sharing the story, and hopefully people listening or viewing appreciate the story and the kind of thing that really stands out. And I guess when we look at the expedition and what we'll do, let's talk about the expedition before we finish off. So what caught your attention to go on the expedition? So for those that don't know, the Sweden training week in Sweden to learn, I suppose, skills to not, you know, to survive or thrive, as they say.
Yeah.
And then in March 23, there's a self-sufficient trek, I guess is the right word, where you carry your own luggage, materials and sleds and tents, etc. I guess that the headlines, resilience and building that, building your tagline, as we get told. What was your, with everything else going on as well in your life, what made you go, that's for me?
This was the one thing that is for me, if I'm completely honest. I love kind of testing myself and putting myself in uncomfortable situations, because it helps me be more resilient. It helps me to cope with what's going on at home. That's obviously one of the reasons why it kind of really draw me to it. Kind of one of the other main reasons, though, as I've mentioned before with you, is, you know, I'll listen. Again, the mental health charity support, younger people with their mental health, and given the fact that that's very personal, a very personal subject to me, that's what kind of the real driving force was behind it, you know. And it's been great, because it has actually given me the opportunity to talk a little bit more about my experiences, and the hope that I can help younger people speak up, because there are charities like Our Listen and other support networks out there that can really, really help you, you know, if you are struggling. So,
And if people are listening and watching, appreciate you got enough on your plate, but I assume you'd always be happy to have a coffee with someone.
Always, always.
Who's maybe having a struggle here or there and wants your advice.
Yeah, well, obviously had the experience of living with someone who suffers with depression, bipolar, you know, mental health issues. But also, you know, myself struggling growing up, so I've kind of seen it on both ends, and I'm more than happy to kind of speak to anyone if it's going to help, 100%.
Great, well, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate the conversation, kind of inspiration.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Thanks for listening, everyone.